Welcome to Business Rockstars. I'm Alex Worley, joined by Vince Cacace. He is the CEO and founder of Vertebrae. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So if you could start out by giving us an overview of your entrepreneurial journey and how it led to starting Vertebrae.
Yeah, absolutely. So I went to college at Florida State. And when I graduated, I moved to Austin, Texas, took a corporate job at General Motors, working on their advanced analytics platform. And it was this interesting time at GM where they had just fired, I think, 18,000 consultants and were in the process of hiring 10,000 IT employees. And so it was this interesting time where I was one of the first like 30 or 50 people in the door. And they were insourcing their entire IT department. So it was kind of a cool ground floor opportunity to get in and see a really big data organization kind of built from the ground up. And that was really interesting to me. But I realized that there were people there that knew a lot more about data than I did. So I was a college hire, had a finance and accounting background in college with a computer science minor. So I wasn't super technical or as technical as a lot of people there. But I had about a year and a half kind of crash course where kind of treated it like a master's program to some degree. And then after being there for about 18 months, left to start Vertebrae. And I also have a record label. But yeah, Vertebrae is kind of the main focus. And Vertebrae is an augmented and virtual reality advertising platform based in Santa Monica. And we are trying to reimagine new ad formats as a medium for virtual and augmented reality.
So, awesome. Very cool. Well, we're going to dive more into your journey and your business in just a bit, but we like to kick things off with our 60-second CEO questions. So this is a rapid-fire, instinctual question-answer situation. We will start it with, who is your favorite entrepreneur?
Oh, probably Alex Jung from SoundCloud. He's trying to solve a really hard problem that needs to be solved.
Okay, cool. So someone is very disruptive in your company, but they are great at what they do. Excuse me. Do you keep them or do you fire them?
Fire them really quickly.
Ooh, okay. How many hours do you sleep a night?
6 to 7.
Do you work weekends?
Usually one day a weekend.
What is the first thing you do when you wake up?
Find coffee. Sometimes exercise.
That is really key as an entrepreneur. Yeah. What rule do you live by?
I like to stay interested in everything and try and learn about everything, even if it doesn't have a direct benefit to me.
Be a student, be curious about things.
Yeah.
I love it. On a scale from 1 to 10, how weird are you?
Ooh, probably an 8.
All right, high on the weird scale. When did you realize that you had the strength and power to become an entrepreneur?
Strength and power, those are big words. probably as a young teenager. Realized I wanted to be an entrepreneur.
Okay. And how would you describe yourself in one word?
Optimistic.
It's a good one. Lastly, on the 60-second CEO question lineup is, what superhero would you like to be or what superpower would you like to have?
Ooh, space travel, for sure.
That's a good one. All right. Well, let's slow it down and dive into your journey a little bit more. First of all, what does being an entrepreneur mean to you?
That's a good question. I think it means being able to create opportunities and then being able to take few resources and turn them into many.
Yeah, basically making something from nothing, right?
Yeah.
So you said that you worked obviously for another company before starting this one. How did that transition look? Because a lot of our entrepreneurs watching and listening, they're coming from traditional 9-to-5 jobs, and that's always a scary thing and something that you want to prepare for when you're leaving your career.
Yeah. So for me, I made sure that I had my ducks in a row before I left. So I'd kind of recruited an advisor base. I had a solid business idea. I was able to get accepted to an incubator accelerator, although I didn't actually ultimately end up joining it. But then with those things kind of put together, I was then able to go out and get a term sheet for a seed round of financing. So kind of aligning those things, the business ideas, the advisor base, which most I recruited off LinkedIn, just like spamming people.
That's just awesome. Like, what'd you say in the message?
I found this, it was a Billboard 100 list of like the most influential people in the music industry, which was one of them. And so I just spammed everybody on the list on LinkedIn. I was like, hey, I see you're good at this. I'm trying to do this. Can we talk? And I got probably like a 30% response rate.
Oh, that's pretty high. So I would think it'd be closer to like 10%.
Well, it was interesting. So I started talking to a lot of people. And then that kind of whittled down into a small kind of group of advisors who were coaching me, because I'd never really worked in entertainment before. I knew about data. I didn't understand the entertainment landscape, what data is accessible, why the problems exist the way that they do. Which gave me a more realistic view of the industry. But just kind of having together a business plan that was fleshed out, an advisor base, the acceptance to the incubator accelerator, and then the term sheet, ultimately the combination of those kind of gave me the green light to take a step out.
Yeah, so you really set the foundation.
Yeah.
Awesome. Have you ever been afraid to fail since starting your own business?
I mean, sure, right?
Who hasn't, right? The guests who tell me that they aren't or haven't been, I'm like, you're lying to me.
Yeah, I try to keep a pretty optimistic and positive look on what I do and what our company does. But of course, right? There's always that, you know, what if there isn't a next year? Right.
Yeah. So how do you move past that?
Well, I think it's what drives you, right? That's what drives you to keep going every day to make sure that there is.
Yeah, that's true. So if you could go back in time to your early months, what advice would you give your early entrepreneurial self?
Don't trust experts just for the sake of not trusting your own judgment, probably. Because I think when I started my company, I was coming out of a big corporation. I had small businesses in college and high school, but I had never started a real business before. And working in a new industry, I thought that by finding people who had been executives in the industry for years and years, that they would have a better judgment or opinion on things than I did. And that caused me to, I think, make decisions slowly, in the sense that I would try and wait and talk to a lot of people, which I think is important in terms of making a decision, balancing it off of a few smart people and figuring out where their differences in opinion are and making a decision based upon what I think about those differences. But I think in general, early on, I did that too often and didn't trust myself enough. So I would say that caused us to move slower than I would have liked to early on.
Yeah, how do you discern then when to go with an expert's opinion versus your own?
Yeah, I think over time I've learned to trust my own opinion more. I think before I didn't trust it because I didn't have a lot of evidence to say, okay, this is something that I believe in. And I actually have an advisor, Shiva, Roger Amon. He's the chief product officer of WeWork. And he told me one time, he's like, you've been kind of making these decisions for a while and making these decisions that aren't really your gut decision, but something that you came up with it as a team, or you looked on paper and it looked like something was better. But I haven't really seen, you know, examples where when you went with your gut, you made a wrong decision. So that was kind of a moment for me where it was like, okay, and you know, not saying that I make the right decisions all the time, but he's like, I'll tell you if you start messing up, you know?
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. A common question I ask is, do you go with your gut or based upon research more when it comes to decision making? And it sounds like you've learned that going with your gut is most effective. Is that right?
I think it's important to base things on research. So for instance, if you have a gut instinct, being able to validate that in any sort of way, mm-hmm. even with anecdotal evidence or, you know, evidence from a tangential industry or use case, and seeing how things have played out historically.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more about building the business, so sit tight. I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business Rockstars.
Do you have a great idea for a product or a business you know is worth millions, but you don't know how or where to start? Are you tired of building somebody else's dream? Well, go build your own. BusinessRockstars.com is an amazing resource for anybody who wants to become an entrepreneur, to start or grow your own business. Go to BusinessRockstars.com. BusinessRockstars.com.
When's the last time you checked your credit score? Those three-digit scores can have a huge impact on your financial life. Credit Karma can help you with free scores, free reports, and free monitoring. Credit Karma also gives you the tips, tools, and advice you need to understand your credit and how to improve it. You can even spot potential errors on your credit report. That can mean better interest rates on loans and credit cards, which can save you thousands of dollars in the long run. Signing up is completely free, no credit card needed. Visit creditkarma.com or download the Credit Karma app now.
Oh, hey.
Hey, did you hear? My friend's company was the victim of an email impersonation attack.
It's a serious threat to every business.
What if cyber criminals target us and trick accounting into making a wire transfer?
Don't worry, we have Barracuda.
So we're secured?
Yeah. Barracuda uses artificial intelligence to detect and block spear phishing and account takeover attempts.
What a relief.
Don't become a victim. Protect your business at Barracuda.com. Barracuda, your journey secured.
Hey, I'm in.
Welcome back to Business Rockstars. I'm Alex Worley, joined by Vince Cacace. He is the CEO and founder of Vertebrae. So tell me a little bit more about where the idea specifically came from for Vertebrae.
Yeah, so I had a background in data and analytics, and I was really interested in virtual reality initially through my background in data. I thought VR was a really interesting medium in that it's the first medium we've had where not only can you measure an entire experience, but also an entire user journey through an experience, which is really interesting from a creative perspective, because if you have a TV like one of these, right, you have a director that's telling you where to look the whole time and he's pointing you in a specific place. And in VR, you have this concept of agency where you can look around and make your own choices in terms of what you want to do. And so using data, you can build things like reactive content and have content that changes based on a user journey through the experience. So I thought that that was really interesting, which is kind of nerdy. And then I said, okay, cool. Well, what are the real problems within the immersive media space right now? And I comprise immersive media as meaning both virtual and augmented reality. But when we looked at the space, there was a large majority of the content that was being produced by brands because they could pay for it. And their problem was that they couldn't get distribution, right? There weren't a lot of eyeballs able to look at it. And then conversely, there's this whole network and ecosystem of creators out there that are building free-to-consume content. And they aren't going to get people to see it by putting up a paywall. So they're releasing it for free and they're not making any money. And so we said, okay, well, what if we combine the two together and built an advertising platform for, where essentially you have virtual reality ads that are fun in nature, so they're not disruptive to the end user experience, that are fueling the value of content in a way that's fun, and hopefully creating a win-win ecosystem for the creators of the content, the advertisers, and ultimately the consumers, because they get to see the content for free and the ads are fun because they're virtual reality.
Yeah, very cool. So how did you come up with the capital to start the company?
Yeah, so I actually initially raised money for a different idea and then pivoted to virtual reality and augmented reality.
Yeah, that's why investors are really betting on the founder ultimately, because a lot of times ideas are pivoted, and rightfully so. So what did it start out as?
Yeah, so great question. So starting from General Motors, my background was in building this data management and analytics platform. Everything from the data warehouse, the data lake, all the way through the descriptive, predictive, and prescriptive reporting layers on top of it, and prescribing those tools out across the company. So I had a good working foundational knowledge of data, and I was helping a friend start a music studio here in Beverly Hills while I was living in Austin. And I started to look at and try and understand what was happening from a data perspective in the music space. And I quickly realized that there were, you know, there's a lot of things that could have improved, but there are also a lot of business incentives for leaving things the way that they were. So that kind of expanded out to basically building a data management platform for film, TV, and music data. And then I moved to LA and over time started to learn more about the rigorous competitive nature of the space and found virtual reality and saw a lot more white space and realized that there was a lot of potential to build and learn and do things that had never been done before versus, you know, building a company in an industry that already kind of had an established footprint.
So it was really opportunity that was the big driving force.
Yeah, I'd say it was interest and opportunity that ultimately led to the pivot in, that was probably October 2015.
Okay.
And then, yeah.
Cool. Tell me about any business partners or kind of key players on your team.
Yeah, so our COO, Mark Bennett, comes from Oculus. He started a company with all the Oculus founders called Scaleform. It was a gaming middleware UI company, and they sold that to Autodesk, I think in 2011, 2012. Mark stayed on at Autodesk for a short time. The rest of the founders, there's actually eight of them, not including Palmer Luckey, who's the main founder, started Oculus. And so Mark went there. Mark went over to Oculus shortly after, did a lot of the initial kind of business development deals there, and was previously an executive at Activision and Discovery. So knew a lot of people in the virtual reality space and the media space as a whole. Came with a lot of expertise, which was really helpful early on in trying to bridge the gap between virtual reality and advertising. And then also on our team, our VP of sales, Matt Odin, comes from the ad tech landscape, and so does our VP of engineering, Kevin. So
cool. So how would you describe your work culture, and is work culture important to you?
Yeah, I think our work culture is lighthearted but hardworking. Mm-hmm. Everybody is usually smiling or having fun. Like there's you know, we like to keep things pretty lighthearted. We like to keep a fun working environment and do fun things, but we're also really rigorous in terms of the amount of work that gets done and the quality of that work. So I would say that's loosely how we define
yeah,
it.
Yeah, sure, sure.
That's a good answer.
No, absolutely. In what way do you hope to be innovative and disruptive in your industry?
I mean, I think the primary way for us. So if you think about advertising, we've had display advertising, text advertising, you know, since 18th century newspaper classified ads, right? Mm-hmm. And then with images and video, we've had video advertising since the dawn of broadcast TV in the 1950s, right? And so looking at AR and VR, how we're trying to innovate is on the format of the advertisement itself. So sure, that could be an ad that happens inside a VR headset, but it could also be an augmented reality ad that you get on your cell phone or a 360 video ad that you get on your cell phone. And then that changes things, right? That starts to, like, for instance, with an augmented reality ad, you can imagine that like trying on a pair of Ray-Bans just in the Safari web browser, or putting a Mazda in your driveway and walking around it, or doing a Snapchat style filter, like we just did one for Lionsgate's new Jigsaw movie, mm-hmm. where you put this laser collar around your neck and it's going up and down. It's like one of Jigsaw's traps from the movie. But really, it's all about blending the physical and digital, making the user kind of the star of the ad, so to speak, on the AR side. And on the VR side, it's all about that feeling of presence, which is the feeling that tricks three of the five senses of your brain into believing that you've been teleported to another place, right? And there's a lot of examples of that, of like people in conference rooms at hotels that are standing on the edge of a building in VR, and they realize they're standing on carpet in a hotel room, but they won't step off the edge. Like their brain just won't let them do it, right? So the mediums themselves of augmented and virtual reality, we're trying to build advertising experiences that are true to the mediums versus taking things like regular video or images and then inserting them into AR environments or VR environments, mm-hmm. stuff like that.
Very interesting. Well, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing all of your insights with us. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business Rockstars.
Are you determined to...
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated, what other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. To save even more, enter ROCKSTAR in the referral box at checkout. That's LegalZoom.com.
Inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Laurel Mintz, and this is Female Founders. I'm here with Sarah Moray of Crosscut Ventures, which is one of the biggest and most prolific venture funds here in the Los Angeles area. Sarah, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us about Crosscut Ventures and your role there.
Crosscut Ventures, as you said, is an early stage venture capital fund. We're based in Venice. We invest in seed and Series A tech companies, pretty much industry agnostic in the LA area, Bay Area, and New York.
Can you drop a couple names of some of your clients? Is that
okay? Yes,
yes. Sure?
So we invest in e-commerce. Some of our biggest e-commerce companies are Black Tux, mm-hmm. Club W, which is the subscription wine company that everybody loves.
Sign up now.
Yes. We also invest in some marketplaces. One of those is Overnight, which is kind of like Airbnb meets Hotel Tonight. Mm-hmm. And we also invest in a lot of gaming companies. One of them is Mob Crush. And Super Evil Megacorp, which is my favorite portfolio company name that we have.
That's awesome.
So I'm an associate there, meaning I vet deals, meaning taking first meetings with entrepreneurs, doing market research, background, talking to industry experts, and kind of just vetting the deals.
Yeah, so you're the gatekeeper. So everyone better be on your good side if they want to get to the next level, right?
I guess you could say that.
So obviously, you're one of the first females in the company. You're the first in the deal flow category, right? Mm-hmm. Has being a female in the investment world made a difference for you? I know you came from San Francisco, was your background. So you've been in it not so long, but long enough to kind of get a sense of your space in the market. So how has being a female affected that, or has it?
Having a team that only represents 50% of our population just doesn't make sense. So I think that it's definitely necessary to have a female on the team, and kind of gives us an advantage. And in terms of being a female on the investment side, there aren't that many female investors. Mm-hmm. But I really don't think about it like being the sole female. It's really just I'm part of the team and it's my family.
I do see that it's hard for women out there to get investment dollars. Your fund obviously has not had that impact in the greater marketplace. But what do you say to people who might have that perspective of it being challenging as a woman trying to go after funding?
Yeah, it is challenging. I think a lot of VCs happen to be male. But I think the industry is changing. And I think there's a big push towards giving females exposure and opportunities to get investments. And I think it's definitely a challenge. But I see tons and tons of female-founded companies in LA and San Francisco, and we invest in them. And kind of like I was saying, it's not really a male versus female thing. We're just looking for good, amazing founders. So
I think that's exactly the right attitude. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about your story, because you came from a larger fund up in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. How did you get connected through Crosscut and made it down to sunny Southern California?
I knew I wanted to work in venture. I knew this was the job that I wanted to do and that I would be good at. It was just a matter of finding my way in. And there's really no conventional route into venture. It's being in the right place at the right time and mm-hmm. taking the opportunities. So I got an opportunity to work at a larger fund in the Bay Area, mostly on the financed side, but got a lot of opportunities to work on deals, do diligence, and write investment memos. And that was kind of my segue into the investing side. And then the opportunity with Crosscut came up. I absolutely loved the team. We just bonded.
Just a great fit.
That's such a great story.
Mm-hmm. How is the investment world different in those two worlds?
I would say that the investment community down in LA is a lot newer. LA tech community has really built up over the past decade, I would say. And because of that, it's a very tight-knit community. Mm. Everyone kind of knows each other. You see the same people at different events, and it's kind of
surprising because LA is such a big area,
but you're totally right.
It becomes this very insular environment.
And it's really exciting. It's an exciting place to be, and that's part of the reason that I wanted to move down here besides for the amazing weather.
Are there any trends that you're seeing in this space? Because I know you're heavily focused on technology. What is hot right now?
I would say there are always trends. One of those is VR. Mm. We see a lot of VR companies coming in. There's been a lot of innovation in VR hardware. So with that comes a lot of companies popping up that are doing VR content or really, really interesting things with VR. I just met with a company that's doing VR for surgeons to prep for their surgeries.
How cool.
So you see all these great use cases, whether mm-hmm. it's police training or surgery or education. And we're seeing a lot of that. And there's also a lot of subscription companies.
That's great because that's like a guaranteed revenue model, which as a VC, you must be very happy with, mm-hmm. right?
A lot of subscription companies we're seeing, especially down in LA.
So you hear dozens of pitches a week. What are some of the best ways that someone can pitch you, or what are the things that really would turn you mm-hmm. on about a company?
First of all, of course, coming in very prepared, ready to answer any questions, have your market research, be able to answer any question and anticipate ahead of time what an investor is going to ask. Another thing is having a really good pitch deck. That can go a long way, especially with someone like me that's really visual. Having a great, clean pitch deck that kind of brings you through all the main points. So who's your team? Why are you guys the right team to be doing this? What's the market? Who is the market? How big of a market is that?
What percentage share are you looking to capture?
Yes.
How many pages should a deck be? Because we hear so many different ideas mm-hmm. in that. I mean, you can have a million different exhibits, which is really where all the real meat should be. But I would love your opinion on that.
I would say less is more.
Okay.
5 to 10 slides. I would say 10 slides is great.
I'm like, I can't say anything in 5 slides. Oh, my God.
Yeah. 10 slides should do it.
Okay.
If it's 35 slides, you're not going to get through all of them in an hour.
Right.
So it's great to have an appendix, maybe have some stats in your back pocket, but don't focus on clicking through that slide deck as mm-hmm. fast as possible. Really focus on connecting. It should be a conversation. It shouldn't be don't treat it like a presentation.
It shouldn't be robotic. It should mm-hmm. be really easy and have flow. And
because
this is another question I actually have for you. Do you invest in the person or the product or a mix of both?
So it's dependent on whether you're an early stage investor like us or a later stage investor. It's definitely a combination of the two. It's just dependent. It's more dependent on where you are, whether you're really early stage or a little bit later stage, that the different weightings matter.
Is there a ratio in terms of the number of successful companies? I've heard that like if you invest in 10 companies, you're lucky if two become profitable mm-hmm. as a venture fund.
Yeah.
Do you have those stats?
When you are an early stage fund, most of your bets are going to fail. Mm. And that's just the nature of the startup world. Startups are really, really risky. And that's why you get a significant amount of equity because of that risk mm-hmm. that you're making by investing. So most investors go into it knowing that a lot of their bets are going to fail. You're going to take big risks. But the bigger risks you take, the more likely you are to get that rocket ship that's going to return your entire fund.
Big risk, big reward. We hear that all the time, and it applies so beautifully in this in this arena. How intense is the relationship between your company and the companies that you invest in? How frequently do you touch them? What does that relationship look like?
That's dependent on the stage and the relationship and what that company is really looking for. So we have some later stage companies that have kind of just flown and really found a lot of success. And we definitely keep in touch with them, at least speaking with our companies once a quarter. But we tend to be less hands-on with those than we are with the early stage.
Sure.
There's some really early stage investments that we make that we're really, really passionate about the space that they're operating in and the team, and we'll be very hands-on. It depends on the company, I would say.
Is there a minimum amount or percentage of equity that you like to receive from a company? I know that also depends on how much they're asking for, but is there a general range or a general range of investment that you typically make in a seed round?
Our sweet spot will typically make write a check size between anywhere from $500,000 to a couple million. But as an early stage investor, when you're getting in early, you want to get significant ownership. In later rounds, you can get diluted. There's many reasons that you want to get as much ownership as possible. So I would say most early stage investors will try to get between 15, 20, or 30% ownership in the company.
Wow. So let's get really specific about best practices. We talked about having a really great pitch and making sure that it's clean and simple and that you can back up the numbers. What are the other, let's say, top three things that an entrepreneur must have before they sit in front of you?
Like I said, having a really great pitch deck, having a really good story, being passionate about what you're talking about, knowing everything you can possibly know about the market. If you come in and we see your competition slide, for example, and we know that there are competitors out there that you're not listing,
it's a blank slide, right?
Yeah,
you hear that all the
time.
It's so funny.
Well, you know what's funny? A lot of people will come in and be like, we are the first blah, 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 like the first to ever do this, first company. And in my mind, like, that's not necessarily a great thing.
Right. Could be too early in the market, or maybe there's a reason that that is not.
Especially for a small startup, being the first in a market is really hard.
Right.
It's a lot easier to come in and be like, here's who's already in the market, and this is why we're way better. Then the market's been proven. You're not having to educate consumers on why they need this product. Exactly. So you're able to come in and kind of push out the incumbents that haven't really innovated and come in as this fresh new startup that's solving this problem that no one else has properly solved.
I think that you really made a great point, which is think about what's already successful out there and how can you innovate on those already existing ideas that are revenue positive, right? Or maybe not revenue, maybe just ideas that need are poised
potential.
For innovation. Potential,
exactly.
Because that's really essentially what you invest in is potential, right?
That's exactly what VC is all about.
I think that's your new tagline. We invest in potential.
Investing in potential.
I love that. Okay, so there are so many different investment options. How do you know, or how would an entrepreneur know if venture is right for them?
That is an amazing question. And a lot of entrepreneurs don't think about that because there's a lot of venture capital dollars in LA and San Francisco and around the country right now. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs come in and think that they have to raise venture money. But there's a big difference between a startup and a small business. And there's a lot of amazing small businesses out there that really don't need to raise venture capital dollars. They're cash flow positive, or they're self-sustaining businesses and they're growing every month, and they're great, great revenue generating businesses that don't need to give up a significant portion of their equity. They can just control their own destiny.
Alone might be the right option for
them at that point. Exactly. And then there's a startup, which is a rocket ship. They're going to be burning money. It's huge, huge risk. And investors take a good portion of their equity in hopes that that company will take off and that risk will pay off in the end. And knowing the difference between a small business and a startup is important as an entrepreneur. And don't waste your time trying to raise VC money, and don't give away your equity if you don't have to.
So smart. I know that the companies you guys invest in are going to be those rocket ships, or at least I hope they are.
Hopefully.
Thank you so much for being with us here today, Sarah. Inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Laurel Mintz, and this is Female Founders on Business Rockstars.
Hey guys, good news. The outrageously expensive little blue pill is now generic, which means you can get the prescription medication to treat ED at affordable prices. And Hims makes it extra affordable. Right now, get your first month supply for free. All you pay is just $5 for your medical consultation when you go to forhims.com/doctor. After that, it's just $30 for a month's supply. Sure beats paying big bucks for just one blue pill, doesn't it? Plus, you won't need an awkward in-person doctor's appointment to get the prescription. Hims has doctors online who can prescribe the medication, and a pharmacy sends it right to your door. It's affordable, private, and incredibly easy. Nobody likes dealing with ED. Now, thanks to Hims, nobody has to. And that's really good news. To get your first order for just $5, you need to go to this exclusive address, forhims.com/doctor. That's forhims.com/doctor for your first month for just $5. forhims.com/doctor.
Prescription products require an online physician consultation and are only available if the physician determines a prescription is appropriate. See website for full details.
Freedom doesn't start in the White House. It starts in your house. Here's Helen Creeble.
A woman in Philadelphia having an argument with her boyfriend in a restaurant got so angry she threw a soft drink at him. Then, as she was storming away, she slipped on the wet floor and broke her tailbone. Never mind that the floor was wet because of the drink she herself had thrown. She was still so angry she decided to sue. She did not sue the boyfriend because he didn't have any money. She sued the restaurant for having a wet floor. A jury ordered the restaurant to pay her $113,000. Her medical bills were real, of course, but does that make the business owner responsible? Looking through the lens of liberty, if we see any law-abiding citizen being held liable for the bad behavior of another, it ought to make us all angry, and we should do something about it.
For more, check out our podcast at lensofliberty.org.
Inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs, this is CEO Roundtable on Business Rockstars. I'm Laurel Mintz, here with Luz Rivera, founder of DIY Girls, and Kelsey Dorey, CEO of Vow to Be Chic. Ladies, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So we're going to talk really quickly about some of the best practices and tips and tricks that you guys both have for being the founders of your company, okay? So let's start with corporate culture. Can you each tell me a little bit about what your corporate culture is and how you established it at your company?
My organization, you know, we have about eight. We're a small organization still, but the directors and, you know, program coordinators, I think they want to have a say in decision making. Mm-hmm. And that's the type of employee that I'm attracting, right? It's like a startup organization. They want to be part of the decision-making process. So I really encourage that. Mm-hmm. And it's not just me telling them what to do. We also have a very flexible work environment, and we use Slack.
You know, we were just talking about that.
Oh, okay.
It's a great platform.
I feel like I run the company on Slack, right?
That's great.
In terms of communicating amongst the team. And we just started using it this year, and it's worked so great for
us. How many people do you have on your team?
There's eight.
Eight. Okay, that's mm-hmm. the same as me. Mm-hmm. Kelsey, I know you've got 20. What about your corporate culture? Tell us a little bit about how you instilled that.
Yeah, I think it's partly having great leaders overseeing each of the different areas, and I work closely with them, and they work closely with their team, so that's great. We have a pretty open culture. I mean, we sit in a big open room together, so you can kind of overhear different things
open
as the day goes on.
Concept.
Exactly. Yep. And it keeps things, you know, we're pretty transparent across the company, so I think that's great. And also just making sure that we get time to spend together. So we have something where when you start at the company, you get a coffee card, and what you do with that is you take out every single person on the team for a coffee date to get to know them.
I love that.
And you can talk about work. You cannot talk about work. It's just to get to know people. So as you're sitting there doing your job, if you have a problem or a question, you know everyone around you, so you feel comfortable going and ask them questions.
Was that your idea? That's so clever.
Yeah, I think I heard it from a different company. I read about it somewhere, so I can't take credit for it, but I love it. So we instituted it.
Well, I think you and I might steal that one, right?
Yeah, I know. I was
like... So as entrepreneurs, we all have to stay really passionate about what it is that we're doing. I know that we all have days where we actually don't want to get out of bed or maybe don't want to do the work that we have to do. There are some days that are fantastic and other days that aren't. How do you stay passionate about what it is that you're doing?
I mean, I think there's just always a million things to do. So if you're having that off day, then redirect and focus on getting some other stuff done. But, there's so many things you need to do across a wide spectrum of areas that you can just focus on a different area that you think is fun, right? So if I'm having an off day, so a lot of times just talking to someone on my team helps. So I'll say, you know what? Hey, let's go do a quick check-in. And I'll take someone on my team and we'll go walk around the block and do a quick check-in and see how they're doing, see if they have thoughts for me. Really connecting with the people on my team always tends to make me feel better.
That's great. And you work with so many young women. I'm sure that helps inspire you.
It really does. You know, a lot of times I am away. You know, I'm having meetings with potential funders and partners. And what motivates me is to, you know, actually go into a classroom or to a space when I see the girls and talk to them and they tell me why they love our programs. So
the
that really motivates me.
Yeah, I love that. So let's talk about some of the mistakes we've made as CEO. So I'm going to ask you to fill in the following sentence. The biggest mistake I made as a CEO was?
I think expecting my team to also go through, you know, how hard it is to, you know, like thinking that they're also the CEO in some way, right? And I think they wanted more structure or, you know, things in place. And me thinking, well, we're all in this together, right? And partly they are, but I think as the founder and CEO, it's really you that you'll do anything for the company, right?
I would agree with that. I had a moment where one of my employees said, you know, you really come to me with all the issues in the company and I'm not the CEO. You kind of need to deal with that on your own. And it was a real eye-opening experience.
Definitely, you know, finding someone outside of the company to talk to about how you really feel, right?
That's why they invented advisors, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I've been working with a coach and, you know, and having someone outside so that I'm not always talking to my team and treating them as a peer in that part of the decision making and the tough part.
Got it. Kelsey, the biggest mistake I made as a CEO was?
I think one of them is, and I think we probably all make mistakes and wish we had done things differently pretty regularly, but I think one of them is wanting to get everything done all at once and have everything happen all at once. Like, you have this big vision and you want to be there. You want to be 5 years down the road. You want it all done right away, all happening right away. And so actually breaking it down and realizing how much time and effort it's going to take to get there is something that, you know, prioritizing and scoping things out. But I think for me, it's always like, I want everything done right away.
So let's talk about scaling your companies. You're at 8 people, you're at 20. You just got a huge round of funding, which is amazing and going to give you some runway for some time. Yep. What's next and how did you scale from the one-woman operation that you were 2 years ago to where you are now?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, it was lots of, you know, interns and people helping out and all of that good stuff as we could go and really muscling your way through it. I think a lot of startups have to do that. Now that we have the funding, it's really about hiring and let's find great people. Let's make sure we add more great people onto our team and let's build out those processes and systems that we need. We grew 10x year over year and we want to do that again next year. So how do we, you know, we need our systems to catch up with, you know, where we are now, but also where we want to be 1 year and a few years down the road. So it's really about the systems and the people and making those investments that'll take us even to the next level.
Well, with 10x growth, your investors must be very happy. I want to be on that team.
Yeah.
And do you have plans to scale? I would guess so.
Definitely. I mean, probably more in the direction of offering our curriculum and projects. We just launched a club kit where anyone, anywhere could order a kit where they can do hands-on projects with girls, 10 girls, so they can run their own DIY girls club. And we just last week received an order from someone in Mexico and then someone at an Air Force base in Germany and to do with kids there.
So you productized your service offering and that allows you to scale on the retail side, basically. Interesting.
So, you know, it brings in revenue to the organization, you know, to help run our current programs. But then we're also reaching girls all over and without having to grow the team 10 times, right? So that's our strategy.
Well, thank you guys so much for all of this feedback. Having great passion about your business, being able to scale appropriately, use fundraising properly. So exciting. Thank you for being here with us. Inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs. This is CEO Roundtable on Business Rockstars.